The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to this edition of The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. I was away working on my book, tentatively titled As the Glaciers Melt, last week in Sedona. So hope you didn't mind that we played a rerun, Best of Betsy. It was a good one. I believe it was about climate change, my favorite subject, and that is the topic of the first segment of today's show. My friend Peter Joseph, who I met through Al Gore's Climate Project, is going to be with us. He is just back from a trip up to the Arctic to see it before it melts, and going to get a firsthand report of what he saw, what he learned, perhaps some surprises, and any takeaway messages for us who may never, ever get up to the Arctic before it melts. In our second half, we're going to be looking at the fine art of dumpster diving. Going to speak with the director of a new documentary film, Jeremy Seifert, called Just That Dive, as in dumpster diving, talking about all the food waste in America. He looks at Trader Joe's dumpster just as one example. Most of us love Trader Joe's, great prices, not always local products and produce, but they certainly have a lot of variety of fun things to buy and eat. But if you look behind the store, well, it's not pretty, but that, of course, is not unique to Trader Joe's. It is endemic to all of our stores here in America, the land of opportunity, entitlement, and, yes, a lot of wasting. Going to find out if that can be avoided, what he found in the course of doing this documentary. Perhaps I would imagine interviewing a lot of store owners and people who are involved in the food chain to see if we can get some of that food that's still good, maybe just past the expiration date, to people who are hungry in our very own communities and country. I want to welcome my friend Peter Joseph to the Green Front. He's been on before, but I think it's been a couple of years, so it's time to bring him back, and I wanted to hear about his trip, and I thought rather than just have Peter tell me about it on the phone or send me an email, let me share it with my audience, because I hope some of you out there are a little bit curious about what is going on up there. I imagine that's what brought Peter to Norway. He's just back to tell us about it. We put word out to our friends at the Climate Project. Hopefully, maybe we'll hear from someone. Going to give out the call-in number. Don't usually get callers, but always forget to ask for callers because I'm so intrigued with what my guests are saying. Hope you find them as compelling as I do. The call-in number, if you'd like to join the conversation on PRN, Progressive Radio Network, is 888-874-4888. If not, Peter and I will have a chat for the next 25 minutes or so before we switch gears and go into food waste. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Betsy.
So, what did you, well, first of all, just give a little bit of background. You are, and I'll give a little bit of background about you, you are, in addition to a climate activist, an emergency room doctor, and as I think I probably said in my last introduction to you a few years ago, you tuned into the emergency going on with our planet, and I think you're taking a leave of absence from your medical work to devote, if not full-time, more time to this effort to raise awareness and activism around climate change in this country.
That's right, Betsy. Thank you for the intro. Yeah, I've been an emergency physician now for 35 years, and I'm used to patching people up and treating them in crises of all kinds, you name it. I work at a trauma center, and, you know, I'm starting to get close to being a senior citizen and reaching the end of...
Catching up with my husband, who always is proud when we go to the movies to say, hey, I get the senior rate. I say, honey, quiet. I'm not there yet, not even close.
Nobody knows the life expectancy of an emergency physician, which we all knew when I went into it many years ago in 1977. And, you know, it's a high-stress job. And I'm thinking these days that given what's going on with the planet, I know what I do is essential and important and people really appreciate it, but in terms of my satisfaction and how I want to think of my life as I'm taking my last breath, I think that getting involved with averting the most serious years, and so that's what I'm going to do, you know. Kids are leaving the house, they're grown up, and this is what grabs me, just like, you know, cardiac arrest used to really get the adrenaline pumping.
This is CPR for the Planet, and you are doing a fabulous job. Peter has one of the best slide presentations, his own version of Al Gore's slideshow, much more fun, I would say, than anyone I've seen before. I got to sit down on one when he gave it to a high school. You gave it to a high school class in San Francisco, and the group looked like they were used to kind of looking bored, falling asleep, and by the end of the talk, they were perky, and that says a lot about the subject matter and the way you delivered it.
No, thank you. I glaze over when people start throwing numbers at me and statistics and, you know, too much detail. And I frankly don't think that people are going to wake up to do what they have to do to affect the politics in this country just by throwing numbers at people and scaring the hell out of them. I think it's the change happens when society changes emotionally and becomes committed in their gut to doing what they have to do, like ending slavery or giving women the right to vote or making people equal in the eyes of the law. Those movements, and that's what we need, is a movement. Those movements are not based on facts and figures and statistics and whatnot. They're based on people changing their attitude and changing their minds about stuff. And that's what I think the struggle is about. The vested interests, for whom there's trillions upon trillions of dollars worth of fossil fuel still in the ground, are very clever, and they are very well versed in psychological techniques. They understand how humans can be manipulated emotionally and whatnot, and they're using all the techniques of mass persuasion to instill doubt and confusion and a sort of a reluctance to take this on. And so we're kind of sleepwalking off a cliff. The science on that is absolutely irrefutable, and it's so bizarre to be living in an age of science, an age of technology. We've got eyes in the sky. We've got supercomputers crunching data, spitting out these messages that, hey, we are doomed if we don't change course. And yet,
when you think of
they're going to build that pipeline from the tar sands down to Texas, you know, and pump another 200 parts per million CO2 into the air. When just look around. Practically every other living organism on the planet uses the energy that is supplied to it by the Earth and the Sun without going back and digging up energy from the Carboniferous period, you know, millions of years ago. And it's occurred to me in a moment of, I don't know what, but that in a grand scheme of things, if you think of Earth as Gaia, you know, some sort of intelligent being, which I'm not sure about that, but just think of that for a moment. Humans are here now with their extreme intelligence and their ability to manipulate nature. And what we are doing is we are burning up the energy stores that were laid down millions of years ago when the Earth was hot. And there were, you know, that's why there's oil in the North Sea and under the North Polar ice cap. That was living stuff that fell to the bottom and turned into fossil fuel. So we are returning the Earth to the conditions that prevailed when this stuff was created in the first place. And that's kind of a cycle. You know, we came along, we're depleting it, we're heating up the Earth. Once it's ice-free, it'll be warm, there'll be more plants up north, they'll eventually, in millions of years, turn into more oil. It's kind of ironic, the cycle goes.
And I'm not sure that
I want to be part of that cycle, frankly. And if we were just dumb animals, we would have no choice, because nature does take its course. But we're not
dumb.
And
our children, And our children don't want to be part of this, and our grandchildren and beyond, and yet we are subjecting them, committing them to this kind of unstable climate, you know, horrible droughts like we're seeing in East Africa, where livestock are dying, where crops are drying up. I mean,
we're seeing it in
extreme weather. Just look at the extreme weather in our country in the last months of spring and summer. What will it take, Peter, to awaken the slumbering masses?
Well, that's the big question that we're facing right now. What will it take? Will it take more catastrophes? Probably. It will certainly take an aroused public and a mass movement, just like the civil rights movement had to, you know, get organized to that level before anything gets done. The politicians are like, you know, weather vanes. They'll blow, they'll turn in whatever direction the wind is blowing. If there's enough wind blowing towards, let's go for Industrial Revolution 3.0, they'll support it. And if there isn't enough back pressure on them, the headwinds that they face from the infinitely well-funded fossil fuel industry, which has a lot to lose, will prevail. It's just that simple. I really think it's that simple.
I agree
with
you.
And I don't count on either, on anybody, especially including President Obama, who I think came in with all the right words and all the right promises, but really so far has, I think, failed us in not putting any political capital, really, into solving this issue. You know, getting health care for all, which he hasn't, is not going to help when civilization is so stressed by the droughts and wars and shortages and other things that will be coming down the pike. It's kind of a meaningless gesture.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Lisa Jackson. You know, in the next few weeks, the EPA administrator is supposed to set down regulations on smog, mercury, carbon dioxide, mining waste, vehicle emissions that will, you know, impact the economy. And with the EPA under, you know, attack by, you know, Republican would-be presidential candidates, Michelle Bachmann, I guess she is a candidate, who would abolish the EPA, Lisa Jackson is an increasingly lonely person, and yet she has, you know, I would like to think hundreds of thousands of Americans, if not millions of us, behind her saying, you know, we cannot let up. And yet somehow that word is not reaching Washington, as you said.
Well,
the muscle behind the movement, if it is in fact there, is not being felt.
As Bill McKibben says, we need to make a lot more noise. There needs to be more noise.
Well,
you know, when the health care thing was going on in August of the summer before?
Yep.
Remember the Tea Party was coming to these town hall meetings for the congressmen and making a lot of noise?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very bizarre because I had just gotten back from Phnom Penh, Cambodia, where I'd spent 2 weeks working in a hospital for the poor people. And I saw more disastrous pathology there in 2 days in their emergency room than I would see in a year in my own hospital because of delay and neglect and poverty. And so there's no government health care in Cambodia, and you see the results. It's absolutely awful. If you're poor, you die. You know, if you get sick, you die. That's it. Then I come back here, turn on the television, and there's, you know, people jumping up and down saying, keep the government out of health care.
and the environment and climate change regulations.
Because, you know, that's kind of what the government is for. It's our government. We're a democracy. We put those people there.
It got hijacked somewhere along the way. And all I can say is, and this is, it shouldn't be a partisan issue, but my God, it's become that way, that maybe the Republicans will shoot themselves in the foot by not running any serious candidates who are seriously concerned about climate change. And because of that apparent void, at least in the one party, and to put more pressure on President Obama, whoever the Democratic candidate ends up being, you know, we've decided to go forward with our Green Tea Party because we need a healthier alternative. So we're going to have our first Green Tea Parties next week starting in Marin County. So spread the word, Peter, if you know any. It's mostly for women, but anyone can come. It's really about steeping on the science, infusing ourselves with information and inspiration, and together coming up with solutions, and to form, you know, some kind of membership that we hope will grow organically through house parties. community meetings, not unlike what Dan Jones and Move On are organizing with the American Dream Movement. Maybe we can collaborate there. But our focus will be specifically on green issues, meaning we've got to vote for candidates who understand climate and legislative issues around environmental regulations, and we need to also start in our own homes because we can't just lip it. We need to live it. So that's my contribution in addition to radio programs, and you've done more than your share and continue to do, and I thank you for that. And before we run out of time, we have another 10 minutes or so, would love to actually hear about what prompted your trip to the Arctic and who you went with and what kinds of things you're able to see. Because you and I could go on about what's wrong probably for the entire hour and then some, and I do that kind of regularly, and I love your thoughts because you are very articulate about them and share your sentiments, as I'm sure most of our listeners do. But we do want to talk about that trip. And by the way, if anyone is listening who would like to join the conversation briefly, the number to call is 888-874-4888. I think most people listen on podcasts afterwards, and I don't do a good enough job about promoting this show. I get great guests like you, Peter, cutting-edge topics, and yet the promotion is the hard part for me. So people do find it, and they do appreciate the caliber of the guests we get and the timely nature of the topic. So we just want to share that in case we don't get calls. If you're listening afterwards, shoot me an email. Tell me you like this program, Betsy@thegreenfront.com, because I only want to do it if it's making a difference, and I like to think that we are.
So I wanted to see the Arctic before it's melts, of course, but you know it's happening rapidly in a geologic time scale, but not so rapidly on a human time scale. There was plenty of ice, believe me. We went to Svalbard, which is an archipelago north of Norway. You fly to Oslo and then take a flight up to a city called Longyearbyen, which is a cute little place. On the western side of Spitsbergen. And from there, I went with my son. We boarded a Russian research ship called the Vavilov, which is a beautiful ship. It's not huge, carries about 100 passengers. It's an immaculately maintained ship that's owned by the Russian Academy of Sciences, built in 1989. It's a reinforced hull, active scientific research vessel. It's not an icebreaker, so they were somewhat limited in terms of going through thick ice, and they would stop at thin ice, turn around. And the trip was run by Quark Expeditions. That's Quark. I can't say enough about them. They were wonderful. Everything was done perfectly, as far as I could tell, very safety conscious. Their naturalists were experts in their field. We had a fellow named Ian Sterling, who's a polar bear expert, and their bird expert was fantastic. So one of the things I finally understood after this cruise was the relationship between the loss of the polar sea ice and how that's impacting the polar bears. And they are at the top of a food chain, which is rather fragile. And I was astounded to learn how that food chain works. And here's the scoop on that. It starts with an algae that lives on the underside of the sea ice, at the interface between the ocean, water, and the ice. And when the sun starts poking up in the early spring, that very thin, weak light manages to diffuse through the ice. It gets to the algae, and the algae start to reproduce. That's the beginning of the season, of the summer, coming summer. The algae is eaten by another little tiny thing that looks about the size of a mosquito. And those are eaten by the Arctic cod. So the Arctic cod, that look kind of like sardines, is on everybody's menu. So the Arctic cod are eaten by the birds. So no cod, no birds. Then the cod are eaten by the seals, and the seals are eaten by the polar bears. So the polar bears feed on seals, which feed on Arctic cod, which feed on these little tiny things, I can't remember their name, and those feed on the algae. as the ice retreats and thins out, it's just not there. So the base of this food chain disappears. So basically, we're going to starve the polar bears. And as they starve, their weights go down. And, you know, they don't eat for 8 months of the year. So they have to feed to put on weight, to get pregnant, to give birth. And if you take away that little bit of algae, because the ice has melted, you're basically just turning off their food supply. And that's why they will migrate south into more populated areas where they can. Of course, in Svalbard, that's isolated, so they can't go anywhere. But in, like, northern Canada, they'll be doing dumpster diving, like you just described, at Trader Joe's for your next program. They go into towns, they go through garbage dumps, they, you know, are a threat, and they get shot. So that's how the polar bears are going to die, because the thinning ice doesn't support the base of their food chain. And it's really very tragic.
It sure is. And any idea of the time frame, Peter? Did they have any estimates of how long this process could take if unchecked?
I don't know for sure, but it's probably within this century or so.
Mm-hmm.
Polar bears are relatively new from an evolutionary standpoint. I think the number was like 160,000 years. So for them to kind of retreat and go mate with like grizzly bears and keep that alive, that I don't think is going to happen. There's been about a 10% per decade loss of sea ice since 1980, and 90% of the multi-year ice is now gone. And that's another thing about being up in that environment. You get to appreciate all the different kinds of ice that exist in the cryosphere. You've got the sea ice, which is frozen salt water. You've got glaciers and snow on the mountains, which is frozen fresh water. You can drink glacial water. You don't want to put sea ice in your mouth because it's salty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you see all the different kinds of ice, the new ice, the old ice, the multi-year ice, which is that blue, that beautiful blue translucent ice, because it's been compressed and it has less salt in it.
I bet you took some fabulous photographs. Are they posted anywhere?
I have some great photographs.
Will they be?
Excuse me?
Let me get a link. If you post them somewhere, we'll put it on the website, because I've
okay.
seen some of your pictures before, and I know just with your green eyes what you filter through, I'm sure it's quite dramatic. And tell
I did a lot of photography. That's part of what I love to do, to document.
Oh. I know. And you're going to Bali.
There's a lot of ice up there still. but the temperatures were much more comfortable than I expected. And, in fact, there were a couple of days that were, like, scary warm, like 40 degrees, you know. You could be outside in a T-shirt and a fleece quite comfortably.
Hmm.
And I asked the naturalists about that, who have been coming up here, you know, year after year. And, you know, their response was, well, you know, it's just weather. You know, weather is not climate. But on the side, they would say, yeah, it's getting warmer up here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just weather, and they're not the same. But
right,
year over year, the north is warming, as we know. It's warming very fast because of the albedo effect. The more
which
ice
is not,
you lose,
which is
the
not the libido effect. Tell us about the albedo effect, Peter. Just trying to inject.
Well, albedo is a measure of reflectivity. So ice and snow are white. They reflect 90% of the energy that comes in, the light. And ocean, open water, and earth are dark. And so they absorb the light and turn it into heat. So as ice melts, you expose more dark water. So the dark water gets warmer, and that melts the ice faster. It's called a positive feedback loop. And those positive feedback loops, are precisely what has the climate scientists so terrified.
It's that positive feedback loop that has very negative consequences because it accelerates everything.
You could see the methane bubbling out of the tundra. We took some land hikes, and you'd see these lakes or puddles, large puddles, and they had bubbles in them. And the bubbles were methane, the frozen stored methane hydrates that are in permafrost. When they melt, outgas methane, which is 23 times more powerful a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is, and it breaks down into carbon dioxide eventually. So the melting of the permafrost is one of those jack-in-the-box surprises that once it gets started is such a powerful kick to global warming that it could get out of hand that nothing we do. You know, we could turn off every motor, every carbon-producing source on the planet tomorrow, and it would still take off by itself. It's kind of like a tree that you're cutting down. You chop down a tree, you chop and you chop, and then there comes a point where the one last hit causes the tree to start to slowly creak over, and very quickly it hits its tipping point and down it goes. And that's what's so urgent, urgent about getting a handle on our greenhouse gas emissions and pulling CO2 out of the atmosphere, because we believe now that the tipping point is 350 parts per million of CO2, which is a very tiny amount of these gases in the atmosphere. Imagine if you had $1 million. You have $1 million in cash sitting in your, on your, spread out on your floor, and only 350 of that $1 million is what it takes to start causing massive changes. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny amount. That just speaks to how sensitive the climate system is. And the other thing I've come to realize, too, is that when people argue that, oh, climate's changed before, it's all natural, you know, you'll hear those arguments. But why are we worried about this? Because climate's always been changing, right?
Right, and they've never seen an inconvenient truth. How convenient is that, where they see the hockey stick and Al Gore going up on the pulpit?
Climate has changed before. We've gone from hot to cold to hot to cold for millions and millions of years. Well, what's the point in that argument? If the point is to say, well, then we don't need to worry about this, this is all natural, that's totally missing the point. The point is that climate is inherently unstable. Climate of the Earth will go in whatever direction it's being pushed. If you get the natural forces, like, you know, the Earth's orbit or the sun's luminosity or the little variations in the axis of the Earth resulting in more or less energy coming into the Earth, that little bit of change in incoming energy can push the climate into an ice age or a hothouse. That's the take-home message. Climate is irritable. It's a beast that, if you poke it, is going to lash out at you. So,
and it's going to lash out at all of us and everyone, every creature living on the planet. And yet, I'm just looking through Media Light, which rounds up media coverage, and you don't have to, you know, do anything more than turn on the television set. It's Casey Anthony trial all over the place, night and day. This Channel 7 is running a special. I mean, CNN is doing a special, and this is a sad, tragic murder that happened to a two-year-old girl 3 years ago, and yet the country is mesmerized, and people traveled across the country to be there for the verdict. And doesn't it kind of blow your mind how where our attention's focused? I mean, popular culture, popular America, versus where it should be focused, given the impacts that we're already feeling from climate, and yet the dots are not connected. Still,
this stuff is a downer. If you wanted to sell...
Casey Anthony trial is pleasant and upbeat.
No, but it's
Americans have a fascination with...
Our brains are evolutionarily developed to respond to immediate threats, immediate pleasures, and immediate problems. And, you know, the murder of a toddler is a very important issue, and everyone has an emotional response to that. I certainly do. I think it is important. But... you know, there's this looming cloud on the horizon, and unless we grow ourselves up with our technology and start trusting our instruments the way we do when we fly in an airplane or use our cell phones or go to the doctor. Use our technology and trust it. We're really going to be in big trouble.
And already Eastern Africa
is experiencing
the worst drought in 60 years in Eastern Africa right now. People are struggling to feed themselves. They're dying because they don't have food. So you don't have to go, and that's far for American terms, but you don't have to go that far to even just see the hardship. Look at Joplin, Missouri. I mean, we can't say that, you know, these extreme weather events like these killer tornadoes are climate change infused, but they certainly are in keeping with what climate scientists have predicted. And yet I would venture to guess that most of the people, the poor victims of that storm, probably didn't even believe in climate change as, you know, possibility. Maybe it's the wrath of God, maybe it's just weather. And that's what's really, I mean, the whole thing is tragic, but to not learn from what we're seeing, not to mention what happened last year with the perfect storm of events with the coal mine disaster, BP oil spill kill, and then, of course, what happened in Japan, another perfect storm, all of which shows that Mother Nature really is in charge here, and we are merely, you know, passing through, and yet we, I don't think, are planning on future generations not having a shot at a decent life. And yet we're not, you know, paving the way for a future that's going to sustain much life in any high-quality way, you know, looking just even a couple of decades down the road, let alone centuries.
Well, Betsy, that's why you're not on TV, because nobody really wants to hear that. And you can't sell, you know, breath freshener and deodorant and new cars with that kind of a message, and the public is just not, frankly, that interested in it. And since commercial television and radio are, they have to make money to meet their operating expenses, they have shareholders that want return on their equity and value, we're the Cassandras, we're bearing bad news, we are the doctors clearing their throats and asking you to please sit down so they can deliver your test results. And it's an ominous, uncomfortable, yucky kind of feeling. And people would frankly rather watch about Anna Nicole Smith than
reality TV.
than real reality TV.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so bizarre to watch. It's like,
as the glaciers
melt. It's a bad
melt.
Dream. wake up from it.
Yeah, well, we're going to all have to wake up and, as I say, smell the CO2. Thank you for your contributions, many contributions, Peter Joseph. Great chatting with you on air. When we come back, we're going to dive into the dumpster with Jeremy Seifert. Right after these messages, you're listening to The Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. Pleased to bring you this programming. Hope you're enjoying it. Difficult as it is to swallow.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.